The phones are pretty well. I think there's nobody on first time caller line, and I think that's about it. Otherwise, the phones are taken up for now with people, but we'll get to a clear one for you if you want to join us in the conversation we've been having. Is it possible that the rise in cancer in the United States goes back to an accident, a mistake that was done in the polio vaccine? And that by injecting so many people with this accidental dose of cancer, that we have the problem we have today. We have a blueprint for other people taking that same model of using monkey viruses to create an epidemic like AIDS. And you have all of this tied back to the death of Dr. Mary Sherman and the JFK assassination. I find the story fascinating. Love to see what your questions and comments are going to be next for Edward Haslam, the author of Dr. Mary's Monkey. You can link up to him at coasttocoastam.com. Stand by your questions and comments on Coast to Coast AM on a Sunday night. This is Ian Punnett. Well, let's just see. Edward Haslam, I think you got to be happy with us. All the phones are locked up. Let's get west of the Rockies. John is in New Orleans on Coast to Coast AM. John, is that right?
Yeah, am I John?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had been known as John from New Orleans. Now I'm in Palm Springs.
Oh.
May I be given the luxury, if I get out of your way really quickly and cover these 4 points quickly, and I can flesh out some of this stuff? I was born and raised in New Orleans, born in Charity Hospital. I was a cadet under the, commander, senior commander of the New Orleans Lakefront Airport Civil Air Patrol Squadron under David Ferry. And I have 4 points. The French Arm, Dave, Oswald, and Garrison. I'll make them quickly. Chill went up my spine when I heard the mention of the French gentleman and the missing arm. Does not that draw a parallel to the doctor herself with the missing arm?
No, one was an automobile accident, and the other was a electrical accident. I think
okay.
Call that a coincidence.
Thank you, sir. That's good of you. Dave, I think Dave, I knew him well. I would suggest that, knowing Dave, that he had dirt under his fingernails, but not blood on his hands. I think the same people that killed Dr. Susan?
Dr. Mary.
Mary, forgive me, killed Dave as well. Dave was not a killer. I think whoever killed Dr. Mary killed Dave as well. That's my opinion. Oswald was a patsy. He wasn't bright enough to be a part of this brilliance where the plateau where Dave Ferry was. Garrison, if he told it, it was the truth. I was acquainted with Jim Garrison.
Okay.
I was from the same squadron as Oswald. I knew Dave personally, and the French arm was just a chill up my spine.
Appreciate that. Edward, what would you say to all this, Ed?
Well, first of all, with Dave, and David was a very complex guy who had lots of different sides to his life, and there were people who knew one side of Dave, and there were people who knew another side of him. And what I say about that is we have a witness, Judith Ferry Baker, who was taken to David Ferry's apartment several times a week by Oswald. So Oswald's role is an escort. You don't have to be real smart to be an escort. And though he did speak Russian fluently. And Dave's involvement in this was, Dave was political. He did fly missions against Castro. He got wounded in those missions. Everyone who knows him knows that he was very adamant about Castro. And, but also I know people who know Dave who never saw that side of his life. And I got pictures of Dave and their babies together and stuff like that. He's just a complex character. And I do have a witness who was involved in all this stuff who very clearly says that he was involved in creating a biological weapon to kill Fidel Castro.
Eddie is on the wild card line for Edward Haslam, Dr. Mary's Monkey. Eddie?
Hello?
Hi, go ahead.
Mr. Punnett, how are you tonight?
Good, thank you. You had a comment or a question?
Yes, I got a question for Eddie. Is it all right if I call you Eddie? Well, anyway, sir, I didn't understand the part about the connection with Oswald and the assassination of Kennedy. I think you kind of skipped over that. And I'm going to take this off the air. One more question. Do you think that Oswald killed Kennedy, and was he alone? Thank you.
Okay.
First of all, Lee Oswald is associated with the Kennedy assassination because he was accused of it. Not by me, but that's part of the history and literature. And therefore, there's nothing you can say about Lee Harvey Oswald that does not somehow automatically get involved with the Kennedy assassination. Part of that is Dealey Plaza and what his role is. It doesn't matter to my story whether Lee killed Kennedy or not. Because, I mean, even if he did, it makes him that much more of an interesting person. Based on what I have read over the years, and I've given this a lot of thought, I think he was a patsy. But he apparently had infiltrated the real plot to kill Kennedy and may have been trying to blow the whistle on them, but he had to stay in position on that. So what I find fascinating about Oswald as it relates to all this stuff is we're talking about a guy who went to the Soviet Union, walked into the American embassy and said he was defecting. And then he gets brought back to the United States. And in order to get brought back to the United States, he not only gets all the proper paperwork to bring back himself, his wife and his daughter, but the United States government actually lends him money to come back. And did he renounce his citizenship or did he not? You know, there is one person in the United States government who has the authority to say you are or are not a citizen of the United States, or you have or have not renounced your citizenship, and that is the Attorney General of the United States. At the time Lee Oswald came back to the United States, the Attorney General was Bobby Kennedy. And that opens up some new possibilities and some new thinking that people have never done before about Lee Oswald and his role in the Kennedy assassination. Because if you're going to shoot Jack Kennedy through the head with high-powered rifles in broad daylight, you better spend some time thinking about his brother, because his brother is the Attorney General, and he can come after you. He's got the authority and the resources to do it regardless of who you are. And therefore, if you frame one of his assets, one of somebody spying for him, as the assassin, it checkmates him. He can't say Lee's cool, he's with me, you know, because Jared Hoover's right there to say, well, if Lee's with you, you just killed your own brother. So there's rooms in the thinking here that nobody's ever gone into yet and looked at. And so I think it's the wrong idea is to say, well, that was so long ago, we're not going to get anything new, because these are new ideas about the Kennedy assassination that ought to be looked at.
I think that's a really interesting point. Let's get to east of the Rockies. Walt is in Florida for Edward Haslam, Dr. Mary's Monkey. Walt?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Just wanted to say hi to Ed. I briefly met him at the Sarasota Film Festival. I produced a movie called Vampire Biker Babes, and I gave him a copy. And we discussed his book, and I also the reason I called in was I was doing research back in the early 80s on tax law when I lived up in Gainesville, and I was at the University of Florida Law School, and I was researching in the congressional record. And I came across, completely unrelated to what I was actually looking for, a record of a hearing in Congress where the United States Army asked Congress and received $10 million in a grant to develop the HIV virus. And that's right there in the congressional record. And I don't remember the year, but I think it was in somewhere between 1960 and 63. So there's only two or three volumes you'd have to look at. And that's a matter of record that the United States Army took that money from Congress, was granted that money, and they created the HIV virus or worked on it. And believe their rationale when I read that article, and I believe I also somewhere in my records have a copy of that. I'd be glad to give it to you or send it to you if I can find it. But if I can't find it, then you can look it up. They, their rationale at the time was that the Russians were investigating a particular human immunovirus, and that if we didn't develop it, they would. At least that's what they presented Congress with when they got the money. But there is a smoking gun right there.
All right. Edward, thought on that?
Well, there is something known as the MacArthur request that's in the congressional record, which is actually 1969, where they're requesting a sum of money about that amount, about $10 million, for that reason that Walt just outlined. As far as I'm concerned, the horse was out of the barn a decade before that. Now, they may have just been doing one of two things. One is, if you put it, something in the timeline like that, you have some kind of plausible deniability saying it didn't exist before that. And the other issue is to ongoing expense. What happens when Nixon walks into the White House in the first week of his office, he declares war on cancer. And he takes all this retrovirus research that's been going on over at Fort Detrick and moves it over to the National Cancer Institute, where they set up the tumor lab. And my question is, well, when did all that retrovirus research get into Fort Detrick, and who put it there? And what I'm going to say now is kind of interesting, because in one of the newspapers next to Mary Sherman's murder, I saw a very interesting story about LBJ suddenly jumped in his limousine, went over to the Pentagon, came out of the Pentagon. I mean, without telling the Pentagon he was going there. Okay, this was a surprise visit by the president. He gets the driver, gets in his limo, and tells the driver to take him over to Arlington Cemetery. He gets out and goes and stands at Jack Kennedy's grave for the first time since the assassination. And this happens the day after Mary Sherman's murder. So I'm going to ask the question, was it LBJ who took all that stuff that was going on down in New Orleans and put it in Fort Detrick where it belonged because of the security and everything else on it at that time? I think we're looking at something that predates the congressional request and was going on secretly long before that.
Well, I have to do a quick little process thing. I had a disconnection from our main computer system here in this remote studio that I have in the upper Midwest. So, Jason, I'm going to ask you back at the studio to tell me who the next caller is, and then go ahead if you want to bring people in and out from this point until we can get reconnected during the break, if that's okay. So, Jason, who would be next? Let's get Bruce on the wildcard line from L.A. on Coast to Coast AM for Edward Haslam, Dr. Mary's Monkey. Bruce?
Yes, Edward, you stated that the government gave syphilis to the Tuskegee black men.
And your point?
My point is that's very irresponsible. The government did not give syphilis to them. They already had it. Yes, it's a fact.
That may well be the case, and if so, I'm happy to stand corrected on that, because that's not really the major point. The major point is that the medical researchers involved in the Tuskegee thing knew these people had syphilis and did not treat them. They monitored them to see how the thing would develop, and the fact that they already had it, I think that's a excellent point to point out. I'm glad you pointed it out. And I don't claim to be an expert on that, but that's my understanding. I was trying to explain Reverend Wright's point of view on that.
Yeah, I'm not sure you're right, honestly, on that, because I think what may have started off one way ended up another, and they may have originally gotten people who already had it, but I don't think that's the way it was conducted throughout. And I don't know that it's so irresponsible, but I'll be happy to look that up during the break, and we'll follow up. Let's get Jim in Burbank on Coast to Coast AM. Jim?
Good evening. Terrific show.
Thank you.
I want to jog your guest memory. At least, I hate to say it, 14, maybe 15 years ago, in the days where any little piece of information of AIDS, people just jumped to their TV set, there was a special on TBS. and it started, and I broke my neck to put a tape in, and I taped it. This guy was an insurance investigator with a medical background. He was hired by the insurance companies, maybe one in particular, but I think several pooled in money, and they said, we are hearing more and more about this AIDS. We want you to get to the bottom of it and give us a forecast of how hard or how big a hit are we going to take. This guy was real sharp, and he got together a group of very sharp individuals, and they started cracking that virus and peeling back the sheets and peeling back the covering and really looking at it. And he stood there. There was a that was commercial free, like PBS special. There was a chalkboard there. He had a top professional with him. He was dressed like an insurance guy. And on the chalkboard, he showed how they laid that virus out, and they said, I could swear that he said there was a bovine component to that virus and another component to that virus. And he said, the fact is these two could never exist in nature, that it is impossible that this virus was built. And he went on to say, only two places is known in the world where they could build this, two known places in the world where they could build this. One was a highly sophisticated military facility. The other was some hotshot place in Switzerland or something. I recorded that, and I still have that tape. It's marked. It says AIDS special, PBS AIDS special.
His name was Streaker?
I knew you would know his name. That's what I told the screener. I said, I knew he would know his name because this guy has looked into this.
And he says it's a genetic splice between a sheep virus and a bovine or cow virus. And I will say that he is not mainstream. But what he's pointing to is the fact that there's something in the genetic sequence
that's not natural.
That's weird and is not natural. And in fact, I had exchanged a correspondence with the man who was in charge of the HIV database at Los Alamos Laboratories in New Mexico. And he made the comment to me in his side of the correspondence that they measure what's called every time a thing that's alive makes a copy of itself. It makes a near-perfect copy, but there's always a little bit of variation. Okay, they call that the intrinsic error rate, okay? And they are able to measure that in all kind of things. The HIV virus, HIV-1, has a higher intrinsic error frequency rate than anything they've ever measured. Now, that means you either have to redefine nature in order to accommodate this one new virus, or you have to say there's something unnatural about this virus. And if you had exposed the original SIV, simian immunodeficiency virus, to radiation, and that radiation had ripped through the genetic material in there and created something that had never been created in the history of nature, that would explain that fairly nicely, even though it may look like a splice.
Very interesting. Boy, you got to love these informed questions and comments you're getting, Edward. Dr. Mary's Monkey, how the unsolved murder of a doctor, a secret laboratory in New Orleans, and cancer-causing monkey viruses are linked to Lee Harvey Oswald, the JFK assassination, and emerging global epidemics. When we say that, of course, we're kind of rounding up in there. Cancer and AIDS. And we'll get back to this with your comments and questions, and we'll clear up the question about what the Tuskegee experiment was about and how people were allowed to get infected with syphilis in order for them to continue their studies. Next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. We had a challenge to something that Edward Haslam had said earlier about the injection of men with the syphilis, in the Tuskegee study, and a previous caller had said that was irresponsible. They weren't injected with it, but I think what it's important to point out, and I think it's a fair point by Edward, is that that although the original 399 men that were recruited by the government for the Tuskegee experiment. The Tuskegee study of untreated syphilis in the Negro male, as they called it. These men were not told they had syphilis. They were just told they had bad blood. And they were allowed, because they weren't told they had syphilis, they went and they were allowed to infect other people that were around them, allowed to get married, infected their wives, infected their children, all under the watchful eye of the government as they continued to write down what happened. So whereas they were not injected with it initially, other people essentially were given the syphilis, given syphilis as a result of the study, and the government tried to make what they could. Lots of children died, obviously, and so did wives in the end. And it's just all a big, massive tragedy. I'm not sure what is irresponsible about drawing that to what he had said. Edward Haslam, the story of the government that gets sort of involved in these types of activities as part of black ops operations. We'll get back to that next with your questions and comments for Edward Haslam on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Ponet. So let's get back to the phones right away for Edward Haslam. We'll start with Allie in Seattle on Coast to Coast AM. Allie?
Good evening, gentlemen, and thank you for such an interesting conversation going on. It's been touching on some research that I have been doing lately that has taken me into HIV, cancer in American or African Americans, and the cover-up of JFK being shot, and that takes me to fluoride in the water. That it's a toxic waste, and that a lot of people have been careers ruined and damaged. And I hear now with this woman being shot because of the research she was working on, and I just wondered if your guest knew anything about if that had come into his scenario.
Okay. Edward, fluoride?
No, I personally have not looked into the fluoride thing. I do understand that there is a controversy over it. Dr. Ochsner was very vocal and about his position on that. I think he was pro-fluoride, but it was after some debate and examination on it. There, the dentists think it's a good idea. Other people think it's a toxic problem. But I do not write about it in my book, and nor did I write about the Tuskegee thing.
Yeah,
I don't really have much to bring to the party on that.
Yeah, we hate to ruin the good reputation of the Tuskegee study. You hate to besmirch the good name of the doctors involved in the Tuskegee experiment. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. One of the things I wanted to point out that I did write about in my book were the plutonium experiments, which were documented by Eileen Welsom, who won a Pulitzer Prize for that, where the government was explicitly injecting unknown patients with plutonium to see what the results were. And it's a terrible story. But if anyone is ever questioning whether these people are willing to do stuff like this, the plutonium experiment clearly proves it. And another book I wanted to mention very quickly is called The Virus and the Vaccine, which documents the contamination of the polio vaccine. And it's written by a bunch of mainstream journalists that don't have anything to do with me, but it's a great independent confirmation of these things we're talking about.
Wildcard line, Charles is in Fulton, Kentucky on Coast to Coast AM for Edward Haslam.
Hello, Edward. Charles. And Ian.
Charles.
Well, first of all, I consider myself lucky that I probably did receive a polio shot in about 1963, but I am lucky that I know of. I've never gotten cancer or anything like that. Anyway, that aside, I wanted to bring up, I believe it's Alex Jones' video I saw online, In Lives We Trust. You still there?
Yeah,
we're just waiting to hear your point.
It got so quiet. I have a quick quote. It takes me about 20 seconds. He says all vaccines contain foreign DNA, RNA, and proteins that may prompt allergies and autoimmune diseases from bacteria, viruses, fungi, yeast, bovine fetal serum, monkey kidney tissues, toxic metals. He goes on and on like that. Does he see any truth in this, that is or was ever done, that those things are in vaccines? And is it in all vaccines? And if so, can they not filter that out?
Certainly the monkey kidney part that's central to this story.
Yes.
But, Edward, what else do you know about other vaccines?
Well, all vaccines are not equal. I mean, there are some that I take willingly and some that I won't take. And it's because of the contents and the method of preparation. We have issues like autism today at epidemic levels. And I was talking to a doctor friend of mine, he's an older gentleman the other day, he's maybe 65. And he told me autism was so rare when he was in medical school that he never heard the term. And now you've got about 1 out of 10 kids. And you've got people who are MD, PhDs say this is caused by the stuff that was in the polio vaccine. And I think those are reasonable scientific people who are saying things that are very unpopular, and they're running the risk of losing their funding by saying them. But the whole thing of vaccines, we've been asked to just swallow one giant pill by the public health establishment and believe everything we're told. And I think it requires more debate on that. You know, I was told that my kids could not go to school unless they got the Hep B vaccine. Okay, so I called over to the school and asked the nurse. I said, "Who told you that?" I said, "No, I want the name of the person." And I called that person. I called that person, and I traced it back. And I finally got on the phone with the chairman of the Board of Education of the state of New Mexico, which is where I was living at the time. And I said, "I'd like to know, for what reason and by what authority do you have to tell me that my kids cannot go to school unless they have this vaccine?" And she said, "I have been to every meeting of the Board of Education of the state of New Mexico for the past 20 years, and I can guarantee you that never once did we ever discuss that subject."
Hmm.
So who's making the decisions?
Right. Mark, west of the Rockies, San Diego, on hey. Coast to Coast AM. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, Ed, I read your first book, Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus.
Good, thanks.
And two quick ones. Do you think Jack Ruby ate his cherry pie early, so to speak? Remember, he was supposedly sat inside a room and given maybe mass doses of X-ray, and then he died of leukemia, I believe, in 66.
I don't think he died of leukemia. I think he died of something else. But it was a cancer, and Jack Ruby himself thought that he was injected with cancer cells. And Jack Ruby had been to David Ferry's apartment, and David Ferry explained to him what they were doing with all this stuff, at least such is the testimony of Judith Berry Baker that's in the new book that you have not read. And so without hard evidence, it's difficult to say, but I would say that given that Jack suddenly died of cancer while he was awaiting retrial and is a suspicious circumstance and one that I think an honest and competent investigation would have gotten to the bottom of a long time ago.
All right. Let's see. Let's get to first-time caller line. Daniel is in Palo Alto on Coast to Coast AM. Daniel?
Hi, Ian. Great show. A quick question for your guest. For those of us who remember taking that contaminated sugar cube so many years ago, is there anything we can do now for our health? And I think you already touched on that it might be doing more than having causing cancer, might be creating other autoimmune problems. Are there any autoimmune problems that he's aware of, such as the Epstein-Barr chronic fatigue thing that was attributed just to the boomer population? Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Daniel. First of all, since I'm not a doctor, I need to give my standard disclaimer that I'm not offering any medical advice here. I'm just talking to you about some of these issues. It is said by experts in cancer that the average human body has 5 or 6 episodes with cancer during its normal life cycle, and that your immune system usually wins and takes over. So doing things to help your immune system and antioxidants is the most commonly discuss thing there, but it also gets into cigarette smoking and other issues. Whatever you can do to take care of your immune system is good. Now, let me go back to the sugar cube versus the syringe, because the Salk vaccine was given by syringe, and when they started the Sabin vaccine, they used syringe, and then they switched to sugar cube. The syringe put the vaccine into your blood supply with no barriers, and it's far more dangerous for the people who got the syringe than the people who got the sugar cube. Because with the sugar cube, it goes into your intestines, and the body has some natural barriers there that help protect it. What's really interesting about polio is that polio is almost ubiquitous, or meaning the virus is everywhere. And for 96, I think, 95% of the people who came in contact with it before the polio vaccine, none of them showed any symptoms of disease at all. About three would get a flu-like thing, and one out of 100 would get what we call polio. So the question is, why did that one out of 100 get polio? And that is that's the reality of the thing, and that's certainly not was what was told to the public in the hysterical run-up to the polio vaccine, which was, and polio is a bad disease, and it was 100 kids a day were getting polio. And in fact, when they went to release the Salk vaccine, at the last minute, Bernice Eddy, who was the vaccine safety tester up at the National Institute of Health, she injected this Salk vaccine into her monkeys, and she got back dead and crippled monkeys. And she said, do not release this thing. And they rolled over her and released it anyway. And it backfired. And they killed and crippled children because of it. But in the debate at the last minute about whether this thing was safe or not, Dr. Alton Ochsner, the guy in New Orleans, said it was, he was so confident that it was safe that he called a meeting of the faculty of Tulane Medical School and publicly inoculated his grandson and granddaughter with Salk's vaccine. And within 48 hours, his grandson was dead from polio and his granddaughter got polio.
East of the Rockies, Jimmy is in Brooklyn on Coast to Coast AM for Edward Haslam, Dr. Mary's Monkey.
Hello, everybody. I remember when Reagan was president and he was debating with and eventually negotiating with Gorbachev. To make a long story short, Gorbachev at that time apologized for the KGB planting the rumor that the CIA created AIDS, particularly to kill black people, and it spread all over Africa. Primakov has since apologized for it and some others. You could check this out. Accuracy in Media put out a report, the AIM report, A-I-M. Mm-hmm. It's titled The Lie That Won't Die, and it's from September 24, 2001. It has a six-page thing on Soviet active measures, including putting out Ku Klux Klan flyers to create trouble at the 84 Olympics in Los Angeles. So very, very important information to get out there that some of these rumors that make America look bad or that inflame certain segments of the population, sometimes it's not true. In this case, the Soviets admitted they first planted – excuse me.
Wait. No, I think you're adding something there.
I'm not adding anything.
Well, you're saying they first did it, and I think this is
right,
really
the rumor.
Okay, Jimmy, hold on. I'm gonna finish the sentence. I think the first did it. I think this is the key part, because I think what they apologized for was for amplifying it, for ramping it up, for spreading it around Africa. The question is not. I mean, I think they should apologize for that, because they were intentionally, it seems like, trying to make sure that it caused trouble for the United States and for domestic, you know, unrest in the U.S. But that, I don't know that that means that this never happened, or that somehow all of what Edward's been talking about never occurred.
There were East German doctors who also wrote a book since the so-called collapse of the Soviet Union, claiming that they helped spread the myth and that it's not true. And the Soviet AIDS expert, Viktor Zadanov, said it's also not true. So it's like the same story we hear about the Tuskegee Institute experiments. None of the blacks were injected with it. They already were in, according to this report, third stage, where they can no longer pass the disease. So there were things done wrong, but it wasn't quite what we're hearing.
Well, I don't know. See, again, Jimmy, I think that's unfair, because we know that because these men were not told that they had syphilis.
That's true.
They infected their wives.
No.
And their children.
Okay. I'm getting this here from a story called The Truth on Tuskegee from Jonah Goldberg. It was an article in a New York Post.
I'm sure Jonah Goldberg's a world-renowned medical expert on that. I know exactly who you're talking about, and I understand his political position, and that's okay. But let's not obscure the issue here. Go ahead, Edward. You want to have a thought on whether or not then the Soviets were the ones that created this whole story about AIDS?
Well, I think Jimmy raises a good a couple of good points here. One is that there's more than one side to any of these stories. And I think what we all need to do is to get educated on the various sides of it. And if we wind up believing one side without looking at the other, we're not really using our full brain with doing it. And Jimmy's obviously done some research and has some other perspectives on that. And I think that's good. Secondly, yes, the Soviet Union had a propaganda machine that misrepresented lots of things. So does the American intelligence. That's part of the intelligence game, and to make the other guy look bad. Now, what the Soviets don't know is where AIDS really came from. So they may be able to admit that they were doing something that they didn't know to be true. In other words, they can admit that they lied, but they cannot pretend to know where it really came from. And I think that's where I'll leave that.
Wildcard line, Sue is in Chicago on Coast to Coast AM for Edward Haslam. Sue?
Thank you so much. I am a nurse, and in the first year or so that they had mentioned anything about AIDS, there was a Dr. Dorothy Day who worked in the New York shipyard. She had a 14-year-old black homosexual child that had died a mysterious death to her. Something that was so weird that she couldn't pick up on it, so she saved tissue samples, blood samples, and other samples from this child. And when they had mentioned about HIV, she brought these samples and had them tested. This child was tested in the 1950s, and he had AIDS. And okay. You never heard about her again. Never.
Of Dorothy Day?
Dorothy Day from the New York shipyards. She had saved these samples of this 14-year-old boy. And I remember it because we had patients with syphilis and gonorrhea and so forth, and we were so careful. And by her mentioning, she felt that people could actually contract the disease through swimming pools and other things because she felt that it was very, very potent and people could get really sick with it.
Okay. Edward?
Her name was Dr. Dorothy Day, and it was on WLS for 3 days.
I appreciate that. WLS, okay. Fine station. Go ahead, Edward.
There are a couple of diseases that have similar symptoms to AIDS. One is lymphadenopathy, and another one is it's called HIV-2. And what it is an infection in a human with the simian or monkey version of AIDS. That has been going on for a couple hundred years. You find it particularly on the west coast of Africa in prostitution environments. There's a case in England from 1959 where a merchant marine, a seaman from Manchester, contracted that and came back. And the point is, when you do serology tests on these people, which measures enzymes in the blood, it looks almost identical to AIDS, if not identical to it.
All
and
right.
you can't really sort it out until you get down to the DNA level.
The book, Dr. Mary's Monkey, we'll leave it up to those people who think they have a different perspective on this to do their research, too, by taking a look at the story as you lay it out in the book. I thought it was fascinating. And thank you so much for the time and the patience in trying to put this in a linear fashion, even though there's so much to get to in one show. God bless you and have a great week. And everybody, Deus te amat. And I do, too.